Mesdames,
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you for inviting me. My name's Rokhaya Diallo, I'm a journalist and filmmaker, and I'd like to talk to you about the way in which women of African descent are particularly affected by racism. I'm aware of the fact that I'm in a privileged position being able to speak here when around the world activists fight anonymously against racism and sexism, putting their safety, physical and mental health in danger. This year, everyone was scrutinising France hosting the Olympic and Paralympic Games. My country was a shining example, sending the picture of happy plurality around the world. But not everyone was invited to the party. Muslim athletes with a hijab or foulard were banned from the games in their own country, whilst men sharing the same convictions as well as Muslims coming from other countries were allowed to enter the games freely. This is a stigmatizing interpretation of the principle of secularism, which is supposedly to protect the neutrality of the state, but not of citizens. And French Muslim women can't exercise their freedom of belief or the right to rights of their own bodies. Systemic racism is born of slavery, colonialism and genocide, and it still characterises our fates today. In 2018, Serena Williams' experience in hospital after giving birth showed how black women are disregarded by carers. In the US, black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related complications than white women. A European study which came out last January showed that in emergency wards, non-white women and persons are disregarded. And in medical jargon, one talks about the Mediterranean syndrome. This is racist prejudice which would have us believe that people from North Africa or non-white have a tendency to exaggerate their symptoms and suffering. Like other systemic violence, such as police violence, which has been mentioned here today, this belief kills. In France in 2017, Naomi Musenga wasn't taken seriously when she complained about a really bad stomach ache, and the receptionist in the emergency room mocked her. She died 5 hours later. Last December, it was Aisha, who was 13 years old, who was accused of faking her suffering. For half an hour, the emergency team, which had been called by her parents, doubted her words and those of her mother. But she'd had a brain hemorrhage and she died 12 days later in hospital. These two cases show that all too many people die of medical racism and sexism in complete indifference. Despite these staggering events, it's still a dangerous experience to try and denounce racism publicly. According to an Amnesty International study on Twitter, it shows that non-white women are 34% more likely to be mentioned in derogatory tweets than white women. And for black women, they're 84% more likely to be targeted by misogynoir. This study dates back to 2018, far before the social network unleashed violent expressions, since it's been taken over by a billionaire. In addition to cyberbullying, freedom of expression of non-white women face many obstacles. They aren't represented in public life and they're encouraged to avoid questioning racial issues. The few who do risk death threats or slaps. I'd like to thank Mary Lawler, the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders, for having questioned France about the attacks and judicial proceedings, surveillance, intimidation and slander that I've suffered for many years in France. I'd like to recall that migratory policies are increasingly seducing a public which wants to believe more and more in xenophobic theses. 5,504 exiles died in trying to cross the Mediterranean to Spain during the first 5 months of this year. That's 33 deaths a day, one person dying every 45 minutes, including women, children, in almost complete indifference. Far-right thought is being trivialised, and all too often with media complicity, so we must protect the lives and voices of the most vulnerable, because they are being attacked by deep-seated structural racism. Thank you very much.